compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back. 888-914-9149 is the number. 888-914-9149. I got a couple of comments on, I guess it was Twitter, when a week or two ago, we spent a couple of days, I mean, over the course of a couple of days, we didn't spend the whole time, but we talked a bit about this spate of UFO stories, like the Navy and Air Force and commercial airline people seeing unidentified flying objects and not knowing what they are, and the government saying, yeah, we're aware of that too, we don't know what they are. And how the Pentagon is going to release information about its study about UFOs. And I got some comments like, oh, come on, don't do UFO stories. It's like people didn't really understand. This is not Coast to Coast with Art Bell. Is he still alive? If he is, may he rest in peace. Or if he's not, may he rest in peace. But those guys.
Yeah, it's,
you know,
George Norrie now. But
George Norrie. Okay.
About.
So, you know, that was a whole cottage industry for a long time. You know, I listened to that show a time or two and found it interesting whenever I would bump into it. But that's like, you know, let's focus on the paranormal and let's swap Area 51 stories and things. This has nothing to do with that. And so if you feel like some of those people who said to me on Twitter, please don't do any UFO stories, I think what they're thinking is that's going to cheapen the brand, or it's going to dilute your credibility, or it's going to make people think that you're a tinfoil hat guy. Then they misunderstand the point of this. The point of this, I think, anyway, is there's something really going on in this area that either we're not being told the full story, and I have some details here that update what we talked about last time, or we really don't know. And I don't know which is worse, honestly. I don't know which is the worst scenario, that if these are natural phenomena, whether this is superior technology in the hands of, I'm assuming it would have to be either China or Russia. I mean, I don't think Mexico or Afghanistan or Zimbabwe or Sweden has better, more sophisticated scientific things than we do here in the United States. But it's possible that Russia does or China does. So I don't know which scenario is worse. If there's another country that has the capability of flying craft that can do things that, according to physics as we understand them, these machines should not be able to do, that's not a very appetizing scenario, if you ask me. The other possibility is, well, if it's not that, if it's not human in origin, then what is it? And is it coming from another civilization? And that's not very appetizing for me either, if you ask me. Cyrus, do you like that possibility? That we've got, you know, some alien race zipping around and we can't do anything about it?
I don't mind it so much.
Oh, you're one of those guys. Yeah, that's right. You're a Star Wars guy.
Yeah, that's right.
So have you been cleaning and polishing your lightsaber in case you ever have to use it?
No.
To zap?
I'm not that much. I don't have a fake lightsaber. Well, that's not true. I have a couple.
All right.
Well, hey, let's start here. I want to see the aliens. Let's bring them. Come on home.
Okay, let's start here. Let's start with the Wall Street Journal and its report over the weekend. This UFO report from the government says that unidentified aerial phenomena defy worldly explanations. Propulsion and technology in some cases exceed present-day scientific knowledge, according to the U.S. officials who were part of this report. U.S. intelligence officials reviewing dozens of reports of mysterious flying objects found 18 in which the objects displayed no visible propulsion or appeared to use technology beyond the known capabilities of the U.S. or its adversaries. This according to that intelligence report that was released Friday afternoon after this show was over. The reports of unidentified aerial phenomena. I've noted before, Cyrus, that you notice that they've changed it from UFO to UAP. So I think UFO just carries so many connotations of craziness and tinfoil
right.
hats.
Yeah, tinfoil hats.
Yeah. So yeah, now it's unidentified aerial phenomena. The reports weren't offered as evidence of alien activity on Earth, though that prospect wasn't definitively ruled out. A U.S. official commenting on this report said, we have no clear indications that there is any non-terrestrial explanation. That's kind of hard to decipher at first glance. We have no clear indications that there is any non-terrestrial explanation. So there's no, what he's saying is there's no clear indication that these are from an alien race. Some of those could require some scientific advances on our part to allow us to better understand what it is that we're observing, said another official. It's clear that we need to improve our capacity to further analyze remaining observations. Duh. Yeah. In 18 cases, the U.S. government observers reported unusual movement or flight characteristics, the report released by the Office of the Director of National Intelligence stated. The objects appear to remain stationary in winds aloft, move against the wind, maneuver abruptly, or move at considerable speed without discernible means of propulsion, according to the report. Some of them released radio frequency energy that was picked up and processed by U.S. military aircraft. I think that means they heard something from these craft on the radio. The report was spurred in part by the public release of three Navy videos showing the flight of unidentified aerial phenomena. One of the officials said that the government has studied these videos and the readings given by the U.S. onboard sensors, but the government has settled on no explanation for the phenomena observed in the clips. Last summer, the Pentagon revived a small secretive unit called the Unidentified Aerial Phenomena Task Force to study the encounters. U.S. military pilots have observed objects moving at hypersonic velocity, more than five times the speed of sound, in conducting maneuvers that are impossible using publicly known technology, stoking fears of industrial leaps made by adversarial nations. Both China and Russia are believed to have experimented with hypersonic technology, but Friday's report doesn't support a conclusion that those countries were involved in the unexplained flights. One of the officials quoted in the study, we don't have any clear indications that any of the unidentified aerial phenomena are part of a foreign collection program. And we don't have any clear data that it's indicative of a major technological advancement by a potential adversary. Friday's report encompasses 144 reports of unidentified aerial phenomena from 2004 until this year, and it offers almost no conclusive interpretation for the sightings. This is what's so weird about this, is that the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, they released this study that says, yes, these things are happening. Yes, we have all the information based upon what we've seen, but we have no idea what this is. That, to me, is maybe the most unsettling, if it's real, if it's true. They have five categories for identified aerial phenomena that include airborne clutter, such as birds and balloons, natural atmospheric phenomena like thermal fluctuations, governmental or industrial development programs, foreign adversary systems, and other, that's the fifth category, for which there is little, if any, information to tell exactly what that is.
So other is aliens?
Yeah, that's the fifth category.
Okay.
Unknown.
Mm-hmm.
Could be a weather balloon. Could be a bird. Could be Russia. Could be us.
The truth is out there.
Is it? I hope so. Well, Popular Science, they issued in the last day or so five explanations for the 144 mysterious flying objects in the government UFO report. So here's how Popular Science tackles this. After weeks of buzz, the U.S. government finally unveiled its much-anticipated UFO analysis. The report released by the Office of the Director of National Intelligence outlines 144 incidents involving unidentified aerial phenomena, or UAP. We have no clear indications that there is any non-terrestrial explanation for them. This, according to that senior government official that I just quoted a minute ago. In its statement, the Pentagon avoided outright denying any UFO activity, saying, quote, incursions into our training ranges and designated airspace pose safety of flight and operation security concerns and may pose national security challenges. The Department of Defense takes reports of incursions by any aerial object, identified or unidentified, very seriously and investigates each one. Senator Marco Rubio, a ranking member of the Senate Intelligence Committee, he said, for years, the men and women we trust to defend our country reported encounters with unidentified aircraft that had superior capabilities, and for years their concerns were often ignored and ridiculed. This report is an important first step in cataloging these incidents, but it is just a first step. So Popular Science, they offer what they think, and I mean, there's no reason not to think these are reasonable, but they say here are those different categories that I just referred to, including airborne clutter. So airborne clutter, the unidentified aerial phenomena with a confirmed explanation was due to a large deflated air balloon of some sort. But sky trash, Cyrus, let's pause there. That would be a pretty good garage band.
Yeah, I had a feeling you're going there.
Sky trash.
Sky trash.
I like that. Yeah, that has a nice ring to it.
Yeah, I like it.
I don't like sky trash, but I like sky trash as a name for a band. So please put that on the list.
Adding it to the list.
Okay, sky trash. It could also be a good nickname. Hey, sky trash.
Yeah, I was afraid you might be calling me that.
Grab me a Coke while you come in. I ain't pointing no fingers. But sky trash, while not particularly exciting, is far from an idle threat. According to the government report, various forms of flying debris, birds, recreational drones, and even trash bags might muddle a scene and affect an operator's ability to identify true targets such as enemy aircraft. I have a hard time imagining that when you're at, say, 35 or 40,000 feet in a fighter plane, that there are that many trash bags blowing
just
around.
Just blown around. Beautiful trash.
Sky trash. What about birds? I don't think birds can get up to 40,000 feet, can they?
Well, I'll tell you what. They don't change direction going five times the speed of sound.
I've never seen a hypersonic bird going five times the speed of sound, have you?
And then abruptly changing direction without losing any momentum? No, I have never seen that.
I have never seen that. Sky trash. Okay, so that's airborne clutter. They really should change that to sky trash. That has a much better ring to it. So here's Popular Science's take on that second category, which is natural atmospheric phenomena. Not all UAPs involve objects spotted with the naked eye. Infrared and radar systems have also been known to pick up unexplainable signals. According to the government's UFO report, it's possible that natural weather phenomena such as ice crystals, changes in moisture levels, and temperature fluctuations could cause strange blips. But that still doesn't explain what we're talking about, Cyrus. It doesn't explain five or six times the speed of sound.
Nope.
Doesn't explain it.
No, it doesn't.
And we've already ruled out plastic bags being able to do that.
Yes, we have.
I don't even think that China and Russia have the kind of plastic bags that can do that.
No. They probably have smart bags, but they're not that smart.
No. So here's the third category, USG or U.S. Industrial Development Programs. The U.S. government has to acknowledge that any unexplained aircraft seen by military personnel could, in fact, be under the purview of the U.S. military. The UAP report notes that some observations could be attributable to developments and classified programs by U.S. entities, but adds that the team behind the analysis was unable to pair the 143 incidents to any known systems. So, in other words, could be us, but it's not. So they're ruling that out, at least for 143 of these. So the next category is foreign adversary systems. According to the government report, there were 18 incidents where observers noted these unusual movements, flight patterns, flight characteristics, where UFOs appeared to remain stationary, or they would maneuver abruptly, or they would move at a speed beyond anything that we've got without any discernible means of propulsion. So Popular Science says, while the government claims to need more data to actually confirm that any of these bizarre motions occurred, if they did, then that means that the flying objects in question use technology that's beyond our current capabilities. In those hypothetical incidents, the most likely explanation is China and Russia. And I don't like the sound of that.
No, I think I like the sound of aliens more than that.
You know, that's what I'm saying. It's hard to know which of those scenarios is worse. If, you know, if E.T. shows up with all of these abilities that we don't have, I don't like the sound of that. But then again, if it's Russia and China, I don't like the sound of that either. So here's the conclusion for the fifth of those categories, which is basically, could it be aliens? The UAP report clarifies that most of the UFOs that have remained unidentified are almost certainly due to lack of available data. but it does note that some incidents require additional scientific knowledge to successfully collect on, analyze, and characterize their causes. So this last category basically says, if it's not sky trash, let's go from the beginning. If it's not sky trash in those hypersonic plastic bags, if it's not natural atmospheric phenomena like ice crystals, if it's not something that we put up in the sky, and if it's not Russia or China or one of our competitor countries, then the only category that's left is something not of this world. So that's kind of where things stand right now. And it's a story that I think deserves to be discussed, especially as it might relate to people's faith. You know, we've talked about this before, Cyrus. What if it were to turn out or appear to turn out that these craft were piloted by non-human entities that come from some other world? I could just easily imagine some people saying, well, that's it. I don't believe in God anymore.
Yeah. Oh, there's the proof.
Mm-hmm.
So,
or maybe there are gods and all this talk about Jesus.
That'd be a dangerous route.
I could see that happening.
Yeah, I could too. Oh, and, you know, did Jesus die for their sins as well?
Yeah, that'd be another
question. Do they count?
Well, we've talked about that before, and I'm glad you raised that point, Cyrus, because we've talked about this issue off and on the program, and that is that, let's just do a little refresher, is that let's just say that, for the hypotheticals here, that there are alien creatures. Does that change Christianity at all? Does that affect the claims? No, of course not. And this is what I've always found somewhat fascinating, or at least troubling, is that many people, it seems, would be at risk of losing their faith altogether just because we found some alien creature. Why on earth would that change your faith in God? Because God, being God, created everything in the universe and everything in it, which would extend to all the planets and all the stars and everything else that's in this universe. I gather quite a bit of it we're not even aware of. And yeah, that would extend to life too. How on earth could that possibly change one's belief in God? Because it all belongs to God anyway. It was all created by God. So for me, it's the rough equivalent of discovering some new and unknown species, let's say way deep underwater in the Mariana Trench in the Pacific Ocean, and we never knew that this thing existed. And look, there it is. Why would that shake anyone's belief in God? And it's really simply a matter of being on another rock someplace in space further away from the one that we happen to be on. So if and when the time comes and this becomes more of a story, maybe a huge story, maybe the biggest story of all time, if we discover that there is life on other planets, number one, you can know ahead of time. I'll tell you right now, my answer is going to be, okay, that's really interesting, and I'm fascinated by it, and I sure hope they're not here to do us any harm, but it doesn't change my belief in God at all, nor would it change my faith in Christ. And that question that you raise, Cyrus, is the next logical question. Is this a race that already knows about Jesus? Do we need to evangelize them? We need to find those things out. Now, of course, this is all hypothetical. I'm not speaking in this manner as if I believe that this is about to happen. If you ask me, I think it's far more likely that we either possess this hardware and we have the capability of doing things and the government's not on the level with us on this issue. I know, when would that ever happen? Or, you know, as unpalatable as it may be, if it turns out that Russia or China has got their hands on some things that we don't know about yet, okay, we'll deal with that. But if I had to guess, that earthly natural explanation is the more likely. I discount the sky trash explanation. I discount the plastic bags blowing around at 40,000 feet, doing acrobatic tricks at 5 times the speed of sound. I rule that out as a real possibility.
Inconceivable!
Yes. All right, well, there it is. And Cyrus will post all of those articles for you so you can check them out for yourselves. In the meantime, take a quick time out. We'll be right back with more right after this. Today's programming sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare. Information on their health plans available at CatholicHealthShare.com. That's CatholicHealthShare.com.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back. Thanks for listening. 888-914-9149. Raquel in Los Angeles. It's good to have you on the program. Welcome.
Hi. Yes, thank you. My question is, when it comes to the church and Catholics, what do Freemasons have to do with it, and what do you think of them?
Okay, well, Freemasonry is a religious / philosophical / secular worldview that is under the form of a fraternal organization. So men join, and women can join their adjunct versions of this, but men join, they become members, and they rise up, if they wish to, through different degrees or ranks that go up to 33rd degree. That's the highest rank. And they, along the way, they're told more esoteric information. And the higher you go, the more of this esoteric secret information that is only available to those initiated into this fraternity are able to know about. And at various points along the way, they are obliged to swear certain oaths that include oaths that they would want to be killed by being disemboweled or have their throat slit, rather than, or if they should reveal any secrets of the lodge. Now, there's a lot of male psychology built into this, Raquel. And even just from the time a boy is a boy, there's something alluring about having a club, no girls allowed, secret passwords, special signs, special, you know, things that only the initiated few know about. And there's some of that involved in Freemasonry because it appeals to that aspect of many men, most men, I think, to be involved in that kind of fraternity where you're a band of brothers and you share certain experiences and you know certain things that other people don't know. And that's all part of this. But beyond all of that is the history of Freemasonry, which, by the way, does not go back to the time of Hiram Abiff and the building of the pyramids or any of that silliness. Those were stonemasons who cut stones. You know, they were not Masons or Freemasons in the sense that we think of them today. So there's no connection to ancient times with them. This really goes back to primarily to France in the Enlightenment era. So we're in the 1700s when this, as part of the Enlightenment project, it came to the fore as a means of exerting pressure against the church, the Catholic Church in particular, against the idea of this established social order that involved the church, the Bible, recognition of divine revelation, in favor of a kind of humanism that arose during the time of the Enlightenment that was godless. It did not accept the idea of the role of the church. In fact, it saw the church as a corrupt tool of oppression from the aristocracy, and the church was in league with those who were fleecing the poor, etc. And these things were not true, but it became popularized and I hate the word weaponized because it's so often misused as a term, but I can't think of a better term right now, where this ideology became weaponized as a way to exert pressure to blunt and, if possible, to subvert and overthrow the authority of the Catholic Church. So Freemasonry as a phenomenon was a worldview that used action and pressure and agitation as a way to accomplish these goals. So historically, going back now, say 300-400 years, a little over 300 years, the church has always had has always seen Freemasonry as adversarial toward the Catholic Church, and not just the Catholic Church in general, but just the idea of the Bible and the authority of God, the revelation of Jesus Christ as our unique Lord and Savior. These are all things that Freemasonry, they'll tell you, yeah, it's okay. You can be Baptist and be a Freemason. Sure. We have lots of Baptists who are Freemasons. They'll say you can be a Catholic and be a Freemason. But another one of the problems is that the nature of this religious philosophy is that Jesus really isn't the unique mediator, the unique Messiah. He's just one option that you can choose. And if you want to be a Hindu and be a Freemason, great. If you want to be Muslim, be a Freemason, great. No problem. Because their teaching, as you become more and more initiated into the higher levels of Freemasonry, their view is that the grand architect, the great, in essence, kind of the God figure above all of these other things and other people, that's the real God. And there's so much more that's involved here that it would just take forever to try to unravel. But in part because of their adversarial stance toward Christianity, also in part because of their ideology, which is at variance with true religion, and not to mention the fact that there are outright denials of the primacy of Christ and other things, the church has always said no. Catholics cannot be Masons. In fact, in the earlier form of canon law, the Code of Canon Law specified that it was a mortal sin to be a member of the Masons. Now, it dropped the word Freemasons in the most recent edition, I believe it's the 1983 code, but Pope Benedict XVI had said that the prohibition still carries the same force and it still extends to Freemasonry. So if part of what you're asking, Raquel, is it okay for Catholics to be Masons? The answer is no. It's a serious sin. And a couple of books I can recommend to you. One is Can Catholics Be Masons? And this is by John Salza, S-A-L-Z-A. He wrote a second book called Freemasonry Unmasked. Now, he wrote this because he himself rose to the 32nd degree of Masonry. He didn't make it to the top degree because I think at that point he had a reconversion experience and he left it all behind and he came back to the Catholic faith. And so this is an expose of the realities of what goes on in Freemasonry. Now, don't misunderstand. I'm not saying that they're doing secretly horrible things or sacrificing goats or anything. They're not doing that kind of thing. But it's the ideology, the philosophy, the religious overtones, and the things that they require, like these oaths that you have to take, asking to be disemboweled, etc., if you were to reveal secrets. All that information and much more is available in those books. So I'll leave it at that. I hope that's helpful to you, Raquel. Thank you. Now we'll go to Joel in Tomah, Wisconsin. Hi, Joel.
Hi, Patrick. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I had a question. I want to volunteer in hospice because I'm very drawn to the idea of being present to people on their deathbed and helping people die peacefully. My concern is, as a layperson who can't really offer much in terms of sacraments, do you think there's any danger in maybe offering comfort and presence to people who are refusing the sacraments and would otherwise maybe need to kind of experience that turmoil at the end to really challenge a repentance or a conversion? Or do you think
I missed the one word you said, to offer what to somebody? What was the term?
Do you think there's any danger that I could be offering comfort, maybe like a comfort. Human comfort or a human peace that could maybe distract from, you know, maybe the pressure or kind of the turmoil that could cause a repentance for them
now
at the
end? Now I see what you mean. Well, it is, I could see if you put it that way, it could be kind of a catch-22. But if it were me, I would say far better that you be there when the person's going through his final hours or moments, just in case he or she would be willing to repent. And you could be there. Because what would happen if you weren't there giving the human kindness, which is good in any case, what if you weren't there and maybe that person might have been able to have a reconciliation with God before he died, but there was no one there to help him? So on balance, it seems that your presence there would be better than your absence, if that's what you're asking me.
Yeah, that is what I'm asking. And that's a good thought. I like that answer.
Yeah, I mean, if the person had not been baptized and wanted to be baptized and death was imminent, that's the sacrament you could perform for that person. What a beautiful thing that would be. And the church permits that for lay people to do this in cases of extremity like that. Another thing that you could do would be to be there and pray the Divine Mercy Chaplet with people at their bedside. And St. Mm-hmm. Faustina was told by our Lord that there are great graces, including graces of conversion, as well as conversion on deathbeds, for those who even are just present praying the Divine Mercy Chaplet as somebody's dying. It doesn't have to, the person who's dying doesn't necessarily have to be praying it. But if you were there praying for that person in that moment, that too could have a powerful effect on somebody.
Very well. Yeah, I like that. I like that.
Okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to see your thoughts because just that concern of, you know, sometimes I think we can try and provide too much human comfort that could perhaps distract from maybe kind of that spiritual suffering that we ought to undergo for repentance. But it sounds like there's a healthy balance that could be struck. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that your presence far outweighs, the benefit of your presence would far outweigh your absence in that regard. And you know, if nothing else, Joel, to give somebody the human comfort and kindness, that in itself is a beautiful thing, and it's meritorious in God's eyes. Even if it doesn't result in any kind of conversion, the fact that you're there to minister to somebody with, you know, a cold cloth on the forehead or holding that person's hand, or a little bit of food, or, you know, anything like that in somebody's final moments is really good. In itself, it's good. So I wouldn't discount it.
That makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. I like that. Yeah, thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome, Joel. God bless you. What a beautiful thing that you're undertaking. I'm sure God will reward you for your generosity. We'll go now to Han, listening in Los Angeles. Hi, Han.
Hi, how are you?
I am well, thank you.
I wanted to ask you, I'm a practicing Catholic, and I met a man who is Jewish, and, you know, he wants to start dating.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to see what the church allowed, and then also he's a divorcee, so I don't know if that's a possibility for me to pursue this relationship.
Okay, let's talk about that. So you are a practicing Catholic. Were you yourself ever married?
No.
Okay, so this would be the first time you'd be contemplating marriage, or at least the first time you would be getting married. So there's no encumbrance as far as you're concerned, the way there would be if there were a marriage in the past. My main concern, I'm sure he's a fine man, and he must be particularly fine because you like him. But my main concern would be, how are you going to make a marriage work if you are a believer in Jesus Christ and he's not, and your very understanding of God and what God wants from you is so different? Do you get the impression that he's at least open to the possibility of becoming Catholic?
You know, he said that he's not a practicing Jew, and mm-hmm. he's even somewhat agnostic, and he's completely okay with the fact that I'm Catholic. And I've thought about this quite a bit. I met him about 6 months ago. I told him I couldn't date him because of the fact that he's Jewish and I'm, you know, Catholic. Mm-hmm. And then I ran into him again. So he, you know, I don't know. He wants to give it a try. And so I don't know. I'm really thinking about it. So
right.
I don't know.
Now, what is his marital status? You say he's divorced. Is that right?
Yeah, he was married to a Jewish woman, and he's divorced.
Okay.
10 years ago, and he has a daughter. So.
So the issue here would be the validity of that first marriage, and it may in fact be valid. So, this is where it gets kind of weird because he's not even Catholic, but in order. As I understand these things, in order for you to be able to know that you had some runway here, you'd have to be you'd have to know that the church says that his first marriage wasn't valid for whatever reason. Now, the easiest way to pursue that, it seems to me, Han, would be just make an appointment with your parish priest. Call him up, say, I need to come over and ask you a couple questions about this. And then lay it out for him, and he would be able to ascertain based upon the details of the situation. He could tell you, well, based on what you're telling me, it looks like this is the way to go, or he may say we should go in that direction. But there are ways that you can investigate the possibility of this. But even if, I'll just leave it this, Han, even if that man were free to marry you in the eyes of the church, and you were free to marry him, it sounds like you are free to marry him, I would just ask you to ponder that question. Do you think that it would be possible to build a stable, secure marriage for the rest of your life with somebody who doesn't even believe in God, knowing how much you do? Now, I know, because I'll get the emails or I'll see people popping up on Twitter here in just a minute. They'll say, but Patrick, it happened to me. I married somebody who was an atheist and it worked out just fine. That's awesome. Or I married someone who's Jewish and it worked out just fine. That's awesome. I know some people in that very situation. I know them personally. But those, I would say, are the exceptions, not the rule. The rule generally tends to be that you now have some friction there in the marriage that it just makes things more difficult for the party who is Catholic. So I would encourage you to think really carefully about that as you proceed and just go into this with your eyes wide open, because what seems really wonderful right now might seem different to you a year or two from now if you're married to somebody who just has no interest in God, you know?
Right.
That's what I'd suggest.
Yeah, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot, and mm-hmm. I keep saying no, and then, you know, and then I don't know, especially because I ran into him a second time.
Yeah,
so I thought, you know, maybe I should give it a try. But I mean, in LA, it's not a small city. You know, how do you run into somebody that you're trying to run away from?
yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, it's really hard to meet a good Catholic man in LA.
I can imagine.
Yeah,
and LA is not get older,
a friendly city for dating, especially you're getting exactly when you get older. So.
Yeah, but, and you're not there yet, obviously. But as one gets older,
I'm 46, so I need to. I kind of gave it up, and then I gave it a chance because I feel like I'm getting older. But like, good Catholic men just don't live in L.A., so it's going to be heartbreaking to tell them again.
Didn't have this job, I would go into matchmaking because I know some of these people out there, and it's getting them together is the hard part. Han, I'll leave you with this thought. Maybe read a book called The ABCs of Finding a Good Husband by Steve Wood. Give that a try. And I would say proceed, but proceed cautiously. Talk to your parish priest and see how things unfold. But I hope things go well.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. You know, I need someone.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Talking about help, the tension between India and China is increasing. They've had some really, I wouldn't say earth-changing conflicts on the border between China and India, but they have had some armed conflicts between the two countries, and it's just announced here that India is shifting 50,000 additional troops to its border with China. So this is turning into like a really big posturing maneuver. That's what it appears to be. They're battling in the Himalayas, and they have been since 1962. India's strategic focus typically is Pakistan, since the British left the subcontinent, with longtime rivals fighting three wars over the disputed region of Kashmir. Yet since the deadliest India-China fighting in decades last year, Prime Minister Narendra Modi's administration has sought to ease tensions with Islamabad and concentrate primarily on countering Beijing. Over the past few months, India has moved troops and fighter jet squadrons to three distinct areas along its border with China, according to four people familiar with the matter. All in all, India now has roughly 200,000 troops massed on the border with China. And the most recent shift is an increase of more than 40% from what they put there last year. So India's presence there militarily is aimed at blocking Chinese movements And this redeployment will allow Indian commanders more options as far as attacking and seizing territory in China if it's necessary. They're calling that strategy the offensive defense. That includes a lighter footprint involving more helicopters to move soldiers from valley to valley along with artillery pieces. So they're building up. They're building up along the border. 200,000 Indian troops now massed along the border with China. What does this mean? Does this mean that the two countries could be in a shooting war at some? I suppose so. But they're saying that this is unusual, and it's bigger, at least, in terms of the number of people involved than it ever has been before. And China, as you know, is certainly not being meek and mild when it comes to its global movements. We're seeing that with our own situation around Taiwan and that in the Pacific. So just something to be aware of, and this just popped up. And I wanted you to be aware of it. By the way, Cyrus, before we go back to the phones, do you remember, I think it was 2 weeks ago, we couldn't even play the audio of that, the black man who was shouting racial slurs at the Asian police officer.
Yeah.
And, you remember that story?
Yeah. When I started editing it, I realized there is just going to be silence.
Yeah, you can't. Because every other word was, you know, naughty word.
Couldn't play it. No way.
Yeah. And the thing about that, we just touched upon it briefly, obviously not the kind of thing that anyone wants to hear, but this black man was denying that he was a racist, but he was shouting these racial slurs about Asians at an Asian cop. And it was all over the news when it happened a couple of weeks ago or so. Well, anyway, long story short, they caught that guy. His name is Shermaine Laster of Brooklyn. They caught him at JFK on an arrest warrant that was filed in the Northern District of Texas, charging him with being a felon in possession of a weapon, according to the FBI. He apparently is a career criminal. He was on that viral video hurling racial epithets at an Asian cop in Washington Square Park earlier this month, and the feds caught him. I think that if you're going to do something like that, probably it's not a good idea to have that posted on social media. Now, he wasn't filming himself, but the other people who were there filming him, he turned to the camera and was trying to explain himself. Well, I'm not a racist, he said. Of course, he used more colorful language than that. So the ex-con, they say this, by the way, courtesy of the New York Post, Ben Feuerhard is the author of this article. The ex-con was busted after he allegedly posted photos of guns on Instagram.
Oh, boy.
Kind of dumb, don't you think, Cyrus?
Yeah, kind of.
I mean, if you're going to do a crime, do you really want to post it on Instagram or Facebook?
These
or
are exactly the type of people that should be doing crimes.
Yeah, exactly. If you're going to do the crime, be dumb enough, please, to post the pictures.
Make it easy
of it.
For us to catch you, please. Yeah. Thank you.
So as you were scrolling and scrolling and scrolling on Instagram, did you see this guy with his photographs of guns?
No.
Or did you miss that one?
I totally missed it. I'm going to have to. Did you post it? Did you share it?
I didn't. I mean, he's already gotten a lot of publicity.
Yeah,
one of the pictures
much.
He posted shows him with a firearm at a shooting range in Texas.
Oh, is there one where he's actually pointing the gun at the camera so it looks like he's pointing the gun like right at whoever's looking at the picture?
Let me tell you this.
I think I did see this.
It gets more interesting. So he has one post of him with a firearm at a shooting range in Texas. Security footage from the shooting range confirmed his illicit visit. So he didn't realize that he was being picked up all over the place on security cameras. Another ill-advised post depicted a dark-colored handgun next to two remote controls on what appeared to be a couch. This is from an affidavit that was filed. Sitting watching TV, and this is his comment on social media, sitting watching TV, smoking my cigar, I'm ready for war.
Wow.
With his guns. A third picture of multiple guns allegedly posted by him. And here is his comment. No games. Proud Boys, KKK, skinheads, white supremacy. I'm not playing absolutely no games with your kind. I wish my people would wake up and unify before it's too late. Black toys, good to fight in the dark. I think he's referring to the color of the firearms. The Brownsville resident made headlines earlier. This is the story that we were talking about when he was caught on camera repeatedly calling Officer Philip Hoon a, and then I can't repeat the words. these are Asian slurs. He said in the video, I'm on the sidewalk. What are you going to do? What's your name? You're not even from this country. blank, 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 blank. Now, here's the part that I found the most interesting, Cyrus. So,
did that didn't get him in trouble?
Well, it's I don't think he did anything illegal in that.
You can, wow.
But I think that that added to his visibility, and it made him even more of a person of interest, I think. But here's the part that I find the most interesting. He had 13 prior busts. He was arrested 13 times prior. 7 felonies.
What?
4 of his prior arrests were for weapons-related charges. The NYPD, for its part, described the incident as disturbing. That might not be the word I would have chosen.
How is this guy on the street?
13 times.
And these are violent criminal acts. This isn't jaywalking we're talking about.
No. Like
he's not getting picked on because he wasn't wearing a seatbelt.
He is an intimidating-looking guy. If you see this video, he does not look friendly.
I get intimidated anytime I see someone waving guns around. I call me weird.
That'll do it. That'll do it. So anyway, it looks like he's going away for a while. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see how long.
I hope we have heard the last of him. I really do. All right. Maybe he'll have a jailhouse conversion.
It happens all the time.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, we get letters from folks in jail all the time. And they discovered us there, and a big part of their conversion.
That is true.
Some great stories.
Excellent point. Well, that's why we deal in hope and encouragement here. Isn't that the truth?
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you, Cyrus. Let's go to Henry in Monterey Park, California. Hi, Henry.
Hello, Patrick. Me and my wife have been reading Frank Sheed's book, Theology for Beginners.
Yes.
I think about 2 years ago, I had called in because we were reading his other book, Theology and Sanity, I think is the name of it.
Yes.
It kind of made me insane reading it, but anyway, very interesting. And we've just been reading the portion about it's called the fall of the angels, and then the fall of mankind, Adam and Eve. Mm-hmm. And prompted a question in my mind, if Adam and Eve had not fallen, had not sinned, but what if their children, who were apparently were still going to be in the Garden of Eden, still on earthly paradise, is it possible that they might have fallen and then perhaps, you know, that would have been the reason? I've heard that, you know, if Adam and Eve hadn't fallen, Jesus would still have had to have come to earth. Might that be the reason for that, though? And if any of their children fell, what would that mean? Some of the human race would be fallen and some not. Just things I'm thinking in the middle of the night.
Right. So when you're done with, sounds like you've already read Theology and Sanity. That's why I always recommend Theology for Beginners first, because once people become acclimated to the way Sheed is describing these things and you're exercising some mental muscles you didn't even know you had, then I think people would be better able to read Theology and Sanity after that one. But in any case, I'm glad you're reading them in whatever order. Well, as I recall, St. Thomas talks about this very question. And my recollection is that he says that if Adam and Eve had not fallen, then the human race as such would have been confirmed in grace. And then if, because of free will, if future human beings did fall, then that would be a personal fall that would be restricted only to themselves. But humanity as such would not have undergone the ravages of the fall of Adam and Eve, our first parents. And I find that to be a very plausible what if, that the human race would have remained intact and we would not be conceived in original sin as we are now, but that still would not preclude the possibility of individual human beings falling themselves. So
possibly have been the reason that Jesus would, you know, come to earth for salvation for those that fell?
Yeah, I think that I think that the issue of Jesus' incarnation in the actual events that happened are as the second Adam. I don't mean I think that. I mean, I know that because St. Paul says that. So Jesus is the second Adam, and he corrects by his life, death, and resurrection the things that Adam caused to go awry. So he heals the wound that Adam inflicted upon the human race. So he is the second Adam. And if Adam had passed the test and had not fallen, then Jesus would not be the second Adam in the same way. In other words, his incarnation would not have been for the same purpose. But St. Thomas says that he would still have been incarnated. And it seems like that would have been kind of like the crowning glory of humanity, the divinization, the theosis of the human race, not becoming gods, but becoming like God in the incarnation of Jesus, facilitating that. We're out of time. Well, hey, Henry, I'm really happy to hear that you're reading Frank Sheed. I'm glad that you are, and I hope it's benefiting you. I recommend him to everybody. Great way to finish the hour. Thank you. I'll be right back with hour three right after this quick timeout, so please stay right there.